Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Arachtos Midrange Sacks. I got proposition this morning, Ethan. I woke up to a message that says, you want to watch some Pioneer? Of course, my answer was yes.
Wow, it could have gone one of two ways, because first what I did was I said sheepishly, can we record a little later this morning?
I didn't know this was Pioneer related. I assumed you had the best of intentions.
I know. I didn't want to tell you because I figured if I said it was Pioneer related, if I used the P word, I would have been in trouble. But you were pleasantly surprised. You even helped me with one of my decisions of what to take with a duress.
Oh, yeah. Landed on the correct decision, obviously.
Obviously. No studying, just got it right the first time. Buddy, I just posted on Twitter that I have, in preparation for the Pro Tour, I'm approaching 300 matches of Constructed Magic. I am so excited to play Limited again. I was like, I'm gonna let everyone else figure it out once MKM drops and maybe shakes up the format, but I'm going to start focusing on what I'm actually good at, which is 40-card decks.
Yeah, that'll be awesome that you just get to like lay off the Constructed matches and get to draft. This format seems, I have fingers crossed, I have very high hopes after playing Sealed and just kind of seeing the cards and how they feel.
Yeah, so we each did one pre-release this week, and I've actually done about four practice drafts and played out about half a dozen matches with my testing team in advance of the Pro Tour. So we actually have a good little bit of stuff to chat about in terms of card evaluation shifting, big picture stuff. And then I think even Ben was very excited. He was like, are we actually going to do this in the first episode of the format? I think we're going to look at a draft log.
Woo! I always put it in the show notes hoping, and we never have time for it.
Yeah, I think we can make time for it today. So let's get some housekeeping stuff out of the way, and then we'll dive into the episode. First things first, the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show is always free, but got a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page, depending on which reward tier you want to give back via. And the base level, everybody gets access to the Lords of Limited Discord. It's hopping, it's popping, 24/7 limited tech support. You know what I'm excited for on Tuesday? You know, so we have for channels that have like recent activity, like a message in the last, I think, 5 or 10 minutes. We have like
all of MKM being on fire for 48 yep. hours.
Little fire emoji. Yeah, MKM channels are going to be on fire for a long time. And that's great. I'm really excited for this set to drop. And I got to say, like, I'm kind of bummed about no early access as a content creator, I guess. But I'm really excited, like, just as a Magic player to feel like we're all on the same page at the same time. Now, there's not this weird, like, slight lag. But also, I feel like the early access events sometimes gives us like false pieces of data where we like assume things are true, but then they're not because people are just messing around or whatever, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to be grinding it up with the plebs. I think I might be starting from bronze. I'm not sure. Maybe like it's going to be low because it's been 2 months since I've been Mythic because I was kind of off LCI mm-hmm. and then we were doing cons, but
you were Cube best came of out three, right?
Vintage Cube. Yeah, I was best of three in cons, so I didn't do best of one for that. So it's been 2 months since I've been Mythic. So whatever 2 months worth of rank decay is with not much ranked on Arena.
This might be great for you, actually, because if you're going to start in gold, you're just going to start crushing people. And you're going to be like, this format's great.
I know, yeah. I love the format.
We're getting positive Ben back. Yeah, so the Discord is great. Other awesome stuff is you move up the reward tier if you want access to the show a day in advance, access to our show notes, even access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben. Any or all of that is available to you via the Patreon. And we, of course, want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they joined. So this week, we're welcoming Jonathan, Jacob, Andrew, Leon, Anton, James, Jared, Thomas, Reese, Alessandro, Krista, Corey, Gavin, Lionel, and of course, Pleated Pants. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Where are you at on Pleated Pants? You a pleated guy or are you a flat front?
I'm a fan of our patron Pleated Pants. I'm not a fan of wearing pleated pants myself.
I've gone back and forth. I'm come around full circle. I was pleated for a while and then I went flat front for a while and I think I'm back to the pleated pants for Mr. Warney.
Wow. Yeah. Mr. Warney needs to wear pleated pants. I believe that.
Yeah. Thank you to all of our patrons. Thank you as well to CoolStuffInc.com, where they've got cool stuff in stock. And you better believe that is Murders at Karlov Manor loot. You need to get those play boosters locked up in the closet. You need to get those play boosters ready to draft with us at MagicCon Chicago. You need to do all of your ordering over at CoolStuffInc.com. And whenever you do, please make sure you use checkout code LOL, all caps, to let them know that we sent you over there, as well as get 5% off your order.
Speaking of play boosters, you notice a difference? Are the packs juiced, Ben? Are they super juiced? You get 24 rares in your sealed pool on Friday night?
I did not get 24 rares in my sealed pool on Friday night, but it was so funny. After the draft, there's a guy I played table tennis with at my LGS who was near the top tables with me, and he was like, "So, how were all the rares?" And I was like, "Oh, I only had one rare." And I was like, "Oh, no, I had two. Oh, no, three. Oh, no, four. Oh, wait, no, I guess I had five rares in my deck." I mean, but they weren't broken other than the one that I had, the 6/5 flying ward. Sacrifice a creature. That card was absurd. Whenever a creature dies, you drain two, gain two.
Oh, God. Oh, that's like blood. Was it the Blood Artist's cousin or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It was very, very big, very scary. Won me a lot of games. But I did feel like it felt less cards, right? You have one less card. It did seem less, and I had more uncommon.
You're out of your mind.
Listen, it felt different. I did not enjoy opening like the art cards in my boosters, but like that's old man get off my lawn type stuff for sure. And I'm well aware of that, and I am not really complaining about that. More than anything, to say that it did feel a little different, but not in a bad way. And certainly the format playing with it just felt really powerful in a good way, like felt March of the Machine-esque yeah. to me. And that was cool.
Yes, powerful, but not in a like spiky way. And I mean spiky in terms of like a graph spiking, right? Like it didn't feel like we're all cruising along at one level and then oops, here's this card. It felt like we all got to do similar things. So yeah, I think you have a note later on in the show notes about it being like March of the Machine 2.0, Electric Boogaloo or whatever. And I think that feels right to me, too.
Yeah. So I take it by your disgusted reactions that you did not notice a difference with play boosters.
No, I like truly like the only reason I like noticed a difference is because like we've been thinking about it for so long, but wouldn't have noticed a difference in terms of rarity spread. I don't think I would have noticed a difference. I mean, just in sealed, in draft, I think it'll definitely start to feel a little different. Certainly with the I noticed myself like having to be like, oh, a white card is missing. So white. Oh, wait, no, relax. There's only four colors guaranteed at common, not all five. So that sort of calibration, I think, in the draft will feel a little different. But like you said, different, but not in a bad way.
Do you know where I noticed the difference? Those prize packs. Getting boosters that we can play with as prize packs again felt so good.
I mean, RIP, whatever like kids I used to find in my LGS, because I like what I used to do is I would open up my set boosters if there was like any like big money card. I might take that to try and like sell for store credit or whatever. But then otherwise I just like go up to a kid and be like, do you want this pack of this like pile of magic cards? Not anymore. I'm starting a collection in my closet now too.
Let's go.
And also speaking of prize packs, what did you get? Like 32 prize packs for your for your win at the pre-release?
I got 21 prize packs and then got some packs donated from some friends. So shout out to Brian. Jacob and DJ each donating one pack to get me to a full 24 draft set of packs.
I gotta come out to Indiana. We got pack per win pre-releases out here in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's what ours is too, but then they pay out the leftover like WotC-sponsored boosters, I guess, to first, second, third.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay. Okay. I'm into that. Well, so pre-release stories, anything great? I actually had my sealed pool. I guess I noticed this. It was really deep. I did sleeve up two different decks and I had a blue green like bunch of clues value deck, and I had a nice red white aggro deck. I was mostly interested in trying out that red one drop, which we'll chat about a little bit later, but I just couldn't decide. And so for match one and match three, I had like friendly faces across the table, so I just presented both decks and I said, you get to pick. Which one do you want me to play?
When you say friendly faces, you mean people you know?
People I knew, not just right. Like someone smiling. So you were
flexing on random strangers?
Yeah, I was trying to think. I was like talking with some friends before. And I was like, there's no way for me to not come off as a jerk by being right, like.
That's what I was thinking yeah. when I read this. I was thinking, wow, someone's feeling himself here.
No.
Flexing on the local game store.
No, I would not do that. How about you? Yeah, I know you won from Twitter and you got those prize packs. How your sealed pool is great. What'd you blue-black control?
Yeah, blue-black control. My white was also excellent. I had white sleeved up as well. And if I needed more spot removal or just more removal in general, I could swap out blue for white. But I was a little worried about just getting attritioned out and having too much removal, starting with black, white, but there were a lot of good rares running around. So I sided into white in one match when I played against the Sphinx because I had a second Wrath in white, which was also a clean way to get the 5/5 flying Sphinx.
Oh, yeah.
Hexproof lifelink, whatever, off the battlefield. But yeah, it was sweet. Good games, good opponents, lots of fun.
Well, let's get into it. So impressions of the format, mechanics so far. I want to start off by props to you, as I often will give, for your early takes. Collect Evidence as Bargain, I think, was a good comparison. It has felt fairly easy to enable, and I think is mostly just upside on a card, like flexible upside, rather than a hoop to jump through.
I can't really say. I've seen no evidence collected yet.
Really?
I did not do any evidence collecting. I had a couple cards.
Oh, wow.
That could, and my opponents never collected evidence at the pre-release either, so
Oh yeah,
I will take your word for it. And yeah. That's kind of what it felt like it was going to be to me, and after playing with the cards, I still kind of see it that way, but have no experience yet.
I collected quite a bit of evidence in my drafts this week and in sealed as well.
And so in the drafts, did you feel like, you know, there were definitely some collect evidence archetypes or build around-ish type cards, did you feel like confident enough to think that those might get there, or you just think that it is a fine thing to have in a card to do without focusing on those build arounds?
That I'm a little more skeptical of. And I, again, we're all working with infinitesimal sample sizes here, but I think that the one draft I did in the LOL Discord, I didn't play out any games from, but I tried to do the blue green collect evidence thing. I think pick three, I got the signpost two drop, the 2-mana 2/2 at the beginning of combat. You can collect evidence for, and whenever you collect evidence, you investigate. I was like, oh, well, let's see if you can do that. Felt a little tough to like make that come together, but I think that's more on me, like trying to think about the deck as like A plus B synergy in a way, rather than just like, collect evidence is good. It will happen. You don't need to like worry about it happening. But like there was only one time, you know, I've played a handful of games with the Black Edict that has collect evidence 6. And if you do, they sack the greatest or the biggest thing they have. That I think there was only like one time where I had that in my hand. I was like, oh, I wish I could collect evidence on this and I can't. But otherwise, yeah, I think it's been fairly, fairly doable.
Sweet. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Relationships take work is a phrase that I feel like is commonly thrown around, whether that's in your romantic relationships, work relationships, or just with friends.
But I often feel like the work is best done on yourself so that you can come to any relationship as your best self. Therapy can be a great place to work through the challenges you face in all of your relationships.
My senior year of college, I went through a breakup that really took me a long time to get over. I went to see one of the college counselors and they helped me work through it, put in perspective the things that I really didn't like about that relationship and what I would want to be different with the next person I dated.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show. Are you ready for the hot take?
I see it in the show notes. I don't know if I'm ready for it. I don't know if the world's ready for it.
I think Shock is better than Galvanize. So Shock is single red, deal 2 to any target. Galvanize is the 1 and a red, deal 3 to a creature. If you've drawn a second card this turn, deal 5 to it instead. I was thinking this earlier, and then the sequencing thing came up in my finals match. My opponent played a 2-mana 3/2 on turn 2, and I was like, I had Shock and Galvanize in hand. I was like, great, I will Shock that because I get to kill a thing with 2 toughness, and then I'll hold my thing that can deal with maybe something bigger. And then passed. And then on turn 3, they played a disguise creature. And I thought, well, I wish I had done this differently. I wish I had galvanized the 3/2 and had my Shock to pay 3 mana to kill the disguise creature. Now, whatever, that's one situation. I think that's important to think about for your sequencing if you have that exact situation come up. But I just think, and tell me if you feel differently, everything is very small in this set. The creatures are small. I have looked at boards of 2/2s, both face up and face down, and I just think Shock being so efficient / mana neutral, like you trading even on mana with disguise creatures. I'm going, my pick order in my head is I want Shock 1, then I want Galvanize 1, and then I think I want Shock 2, Shock 3.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love this confidence from Ethan, just laying out the takes. I don't know that I'm ready to co-sign it yet, but I'm close. And it was feeling similarly. I just don't have quite as much experience in draft gameplay yet, where I assume efficiency is going to matter more. So yeah, it's not crazy to me. I could certainly see it. I just don't have enough experience to have a strong opinion to weigh in yet.
And my feeling so far is that there's not a lot of great stuff to do before turn three. So the good stuff is really good. That good stuff, I think, is often coming at uncommon or maybe rare and mythic. But we'll chat about a few uncommons a little later. But you feel slightly differently so far?
Yeah, I don't know that I agree. I feel like there's a lot of good twos running around. I feel like it was certainly possible to curve out 2, 3, 4 and seal. That happened a lot for my opponents, happened a lot for me. I do agree that the premium twos are obviously always really, really good. But I didn't feel that the games were starting on turn three, a la Khans of Tarkir or something.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just more like trying to emphasize like how good, and maybe we don't need to emphasize this because it's Modern Limited, but how good the good two drops are. Like, they're so much better than the filler ones. Like,
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? And I think 1-3 for 2 might be a good stat line in this format. You've got a bit of a hot take when we get to chatting about maybe some top green commons, but the 2-mana 1/3 reach in green with Collect Evidence 6, I think is quite good. And without any collecting of evidence, I think it's just like a good stat line to blank 2/1s, to bounce off of 2/2s early, etc.
Yeah, we might as well chat about it now. So it's V2 Ghazi Inspectors, 1 green for a 1/3. You can cast it and collect evidence 6. If you do, it gets a +1/+1 counter and you gain 2. I think even if you don't collect evidence, like the 1/3 reach, and again, I haven't seen this card on the battlefield yet, but just would have wanted it on the battlefield, like in a lot of the games. And this is what gives me high hopes for the format. Like, think about the format that shall not be spoken of, LCI, but how much you would have wanted a 1/3 reach in green there, like, and how much that would have changed the format. And, you know, certainly if that were a 2/4, like, it just lines up very well against a lot of the good blue and white cards that we've already seen in Murders at Karlov Manor. And I think also cool that, you know, collect evidence seems to be there. And we've knocked these later game mechanics recently just as being a little clunky and harder to set up than some of the more streamlined ones. But the colors that have the late game mechanics in Murders at Karlov Manor also just have good classic tools to help you get to the late game, I think, which is going to be a huge boon for them and for the mechanics.
Well, and one other shout about the V2 Ghazi 2 drop is that I just sort of decided in my head that it could only grow itself. It can put the counter anywhere.
Ooh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so that I think just bumps it up even more, makes it a better late game card as well. I also wonder what this means about Reasonable Doubt. This is the counter spell, the 1 and a blue counter target spell, unless its controller pays 2, suspect up to 1 target creature. Because there's not a lot of great stuff, I think, to do early. Like, I think the thought was about Reasonable Doubt's not going to be good, right? Because everyone's holding up 2 mana for their clues and for their undisguised creatures, whatever. I'm not sure, how much that's the case. Certainly in those early turns, like, you're tapping out. It's Modern Magic. Like, you got stuff to do with your mana. People are tapping out. I got my eyes on Reasonable Doubt.
I don't love it still. I agree. It's got potential, but I'm not willing to like go all in on this as one of the top blue commons yet. Cause I think a lot of decks do want to on turn 4 specifically, which is when you really start to get a mana advantage on Reasonable Doubt. Mm. Want to have played a disguised creature, flip up that disguised creature for 2 mana, double spell maybe, and then you're just trading with a 2-drop. I think it's a fine card, certainly playable. I just don't know about one of the top commons.
Disguise has seemed really well designed to me so far. And I also think we nailed the big, I mean, not that it was hard, but I think we nailed the big 4 common hybrid morphs. That's Dogwalker is the red white one, the 3/1 flips up, you get 2 1/1s tapped. Gadget Technician, that's the 3/2 that brings a 1/1 Thopter along with it. Fairy Snoop is the Dimir 1/4. If you flip it up, you get to look at the top 2 cards, put 1 in your hand, 1 into your yard. And Sanguine Savior is the 2/1 Lifelinker and Orzhov. I think those are all excellent cards. And I've like exactly how we thought they would play out of like, you can put the black white hybrid one in your white blue deck or whatever, you know, like they're pretty flexible picks in that respect.
Yeah, I definitely did that at the pre-release with a lot of these. I would have killed for some Fairy Snoops, but didn't have any. I did get to play with Granite Witness, and I think I would also add that to this list. That's the blue-white one. That's a 3/2 flyer with Vigilance, which is also just huge, having Vigilance and Flying. Flying's been great in the format. Shocking news at 11. Yeah. Limited players like Flying. But the flexibility of its play patterns as far as offense and defense is really cool. Like, being able to flip it up on your turn and tap down a blocker to use it in offensive mode, but also then to flip it up on the opponent's turn and tap down attacker and then like swing the next turn. It just felt very versatile as far as controlling tempo in the games for a cheap flip up cost. And that's kind of my feeling about disguise cards right now, is that if they flip up for more than two mana, with the exception of Fairy Snoop at common, like I am just completely uninterested.
Right. Like you're just not like I did flip up the 6/7 reach, the red green hybrid. But like that was in my deck just as like, this is just disguise filler. Like if I flip it up, it's gravy, but it's mostly just there as something to do on three.
Well, and that's in sealed too, right? Like you're never happy about that in draft, or maybe, I mean, certainly no, red green. Like the tough thing for draft is that all five of these good ones, if we're adding Granite Witness to the list, are white and blue.
Yeah.
Like white and blue overlaps all of them.
Well, and this was a lot of the scuttle, I think, from our Discord going into the format was like, white looks juiced. And we certainly felt like, well, white's commons look juiced. It's uncommons, not so much. I don't know if that even holds water anymore. But like, I do think white's really white and red for me have like those are my focus spots right now. I think those colors are great. And that color pair is really, really good. But I do think it's important to point out what you did, which is that white and blue overlap the top half of these disguise cards. And this, like, this top half is like, it's a big gap. Like,
it's a huge gap.
The four green ones are all just clunk city. Right? And I know we hate green on this podcast and it's a bit now, but like they're all really clunky and bad.
They are all really clunky and bad. And green's supposed to be the color that gets to do the disguising. Like that's what we were talking about in the crash course, but it really did bear itself out that way after playing with the cards completely. And the other thing I've felt about disguising at the pre-release was, if I had the chance to kill a disguise creature before my opponent flipped it up, like I wanted to do it. They were almost all good. And certainly in draft, I would imagine if your opponents are playing disguise creatures, they're gonna be the good ones, because the bad ones are so bad. Like there is that gap, right?
Well, yeah, and it also feels like you can get got by your removal, right? Like you try and let's say you're like, well, I'm not worried about, they only have four mana, so I can shock this thing into open mana and not feel like I can get got. And then it's like, nope, it's Fairy Snoop. It's not quite the KTK rules of whatever, you'll never get got for less than five mana in terms of, you know, trading with a 2/2. And it's not slightly true with the Snoop, right? You're still bouncing off of a 2/2, but you do blank a shock. But I also had like a spot where I had the one in a black, can't be countered, destroy a thing that's mana value three or less. And I was like, oh, I need to kill this disguised creature while it's face down, because I could get blown out if this thing flips up and happens to be more than three mana.
Yeah. Maybe that was why I felt that I had two of that card, but also just they have great bonuses when they flip up.
Right,
like Dogwalker's a huge problem when it flips up. And if you get it while it's disguised, it is much better for you. And just want to hammer home the point about like the flip up cost of two, with the exception of Fairy Snoop. Like if you're disguising, like it needs to be disguising towards mana efficiency. Like it's not Khans of Tarkir-esque in like, okay, I'm going to play my disguise thing on turn three, and I'm going to play a disguise thing on turn four, and then I'm going to be choked on mana the rest of the game trying to spend five and six mana to flip up these disguise creatures. Like I feel pretty strongly that that is going to be a losing recipe in Murders at Carlov Manor.
I said last week that I thought the format was likely to be an 18 lander for me because of disguise and clues. What did you think about that in your one sealed run?
Yeah, I played 18 lands and like maybe would have run 19 like in sealed.
Wow.
I don't know. I wanted mana. I was super mana hungry, partially because of sources, right? Because I was playing those off color disguise creatures. So they were all double blue for me. So I had triple black rare. I had a 9/9 split.
Okay.
But if I hadn't had the triple black rare, I probably would have gone 10/8 in favor of blue to try to hit those blue common hybrid morphs on curve. But it was partially sources, but also partially mana hungry. Like it's just hard to run out of stuff to do in sealed.
I mean, I
had a good
totally
sealed
agree.
Pool also. Like I had a wrath. Like I had good rares at the top of my curve that I didn't want to miss land drops for.
Yes, I agree. I've been doing a mix in draft. But what's nice is like, you can, there is fixing running around, but like I did a draft. I ended up in black white with two copies of the Five mana, blue, black, mind control effect. You like steal their creature. It's a 1/1, loses its power and toughness. It's base 1/1 and has death touch. And I only ended up with one escape tunnel. And I was like, I can do escape tunnel plus two islands and go 18 lands. And I don't feel bad about running 18 lands. And then I get my sources count up to something respectable, you know, and that's a nice spot to be in.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the 18 lands, and I often chose to draw in sealed also. My pool was pretty unique in that I had a lot of cheap, efficient removal and a lot of good early plays, but it felt good drawing in sealed to me.
What did you think about the fixing available to you?
Oof, my pool did not have any, which was I was feeling a lot. If I had an escape tunnel or a public thoroughfare or even two of one of each or something, I could have splashed quite a bit and gone a lot deeper, but I didn't have that. But it opens up so much for you when it comes to splashing the off-color disguise creatures, or there just are good rare disguise creatures that have a single pip when you flip up from disguising them. So I was very impressed with those two cards and really wanted them in sealed. And I imagine you will want to pick them up in draft too, just to leave options like that open for yourself.
I think so. I think so too. One thing that my first round opponent, they got like mana screwed both games, like stuck on three, game one, stuck on two, game two. But in game two, they had Plains and their second land was the Clue land. And afterwards he was like, I think this card might be terrible because I was stuck on mana. If you have any, and like there is incidental ways to blow up artifacts and enchantments. He was like, if you have any way to interact with artifacts in your deck, you're just going to stone rain me. And like the fact, I think artifact on that card is a downside.
That's so fair.
Just throwing that out there.
Seems a little niche, but it's fair.
Wow. Ben, you're the first time you get your Clue land.
I will
land
be so mad the first time it happens to me. I'll be furious.
Yeah, it's a little salty sea dog. So going into your first draft on Tuesday, where are your thoughts at?
Well, first of all, we need to chat about removal. Removal is back. In a big way. The efficient removal in this set is incredible. Like, so for example, Jury was out for me on the white exile effect, makeshift binding, two and a white exile creature. If a makeshift binding leaves the battlefield, you gain two life. The card is incredible.
Agreed. That's interesting because later on, you're down on the blue aura. I found the blue aura to be fine. This is dramatic accusation. Two and a blue. Tap a thing, keep it tapped, and you can pay blue to shuffle it into its owner's library. Again, this was in sealed. I played it, so you know, you have to, it's slightly slower. You have to get your removal where you can, but like I shuffled in a, what's it called? Vanifar, a mythic bomb. Like I found that to be pretty effective.
Yeah. I mean, in the same way that five mana kill a thing at sorcery speed is effective. Like when there's a bomb on the battlefield, it gets the job done, but that card is clunky with a capital C.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
And there's no life gain. Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
I think certainly the two life off the white card goes a long way when you're trying to stabilize. So I was really impressed with all the good removal.
I'm not saying they're the same, for sure. I'm not saying they're as good as each other. And I agree with you. The white one is very good. And obviously, I'm high on efficient removal. The most efficient of them all is Shock, my friend.
Right. Well, and that's what leads me back to the format feeling like March of the Machine-esque, right? We had great interaction, great threats there. Like, it just seems like there's going to be a lot of good limited gameplay, a lot of good clean gameplay.
Yeah.
So heading into the first drafts, I think the early decks to draft and try to win with are going to be the white beatdown decks, especially blue-white detectives. That deck just looks like it's going to be a complete menace in the format.
I just want to draft red-white dog walkers. That's all I want to do.
Red-white dog walkers. I mean, certainly red-white, I think, is going to be able to beat down as well. But I think, you know, like level two, I do think there's going to be a ton of room for the format to breathe and adapt. That's my hope. And it really does look like there is tools that the other colors get to combat those white curve out, attack you with flyers or curve out, you know, attack you with Boros Battalion. Mm-hmm. I think black and green get the tools to try to stop that.
Yeah, I buy that for sure.
And then we talked about this already, but it is a bit awkward for format balance that all those good disguise hybrid commons touch white and blue. I mean, that's certainly going to juice blue and white a little bit. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the tools are there for the other colors. And I'm going into this just treating the format like March of the Machine. It seems like a lot of color pairs want to do similar things to what they did in March of the Machine. Certainly, blue-white detectives is almost an analog comp for blue-white knights. It's going to be that same type of aggro beatdown deck.
We got Gumption coming back. Gumption 2.0 coming into this format.
I don't know about red-black suspect. We haven't talked about suspect at all. That felt great. It was a really cool mechanic.
Yes.
I liked the gameplay of it. It just was as flexible as we thought it was going to be. It mattered when your opponent suspected a creature and then fell behind. They got punished for choosing to suspect a creature and not reading how the game was going to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah.
At some point in our illustrious love lives, we've all asked our partner that age-old question that people have been asking for probably thousands of years.
Does this resolve?
No.
Keep or mulligan?
No.
How are you sideboarding against Blue-Red Phoenix? Sorry, I've been playing too much Pioneer. As far as I'm concerned, there is nothing happening before February 23rd.
Not true, Ethan. Valentine's Day is coming up, and MeUndies is here to help you look and feel great with tons of styles and options so you can find what's just right for you and your partner.
MeUndies has something for everyone, from all-black classics to fun expressive print, and sizes ranging from extra small to 4XL, guaranteeing a flattering cut for every body.
MeUndies signature fabric is as soft as a warm hug from your favorite sweater. It's breathable, stretchy,
and as cozy as casting a turn one Thoughtseize in Pioneer.
This Valentine's Day, good things come in big packages at MeUndies. Get 20% off your first order plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/LOL.
That's MeUndies.com/LOL for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in. All right, so we've got a list of cards here to chat about. Some just sort of like checking in on cards we liked, cards we didn't like, if they're moving up or down, whatever. First up, I've got Inside Source. This is the 2 and a white, 1/1 ETBs. You get a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token, and then 3 tap. Target detective you control gets +2/+0 and gains vigilance until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery. Not really activating this very much. It's quite expensive to activate, and sorcery speed. Like, you're happy that it exists. It's not downside, but just 3 mana for 2/2 +1/1, I have liked.
Yeah, card's been very good. I had cast it, and it was cast against me a lot at the pre-release, and every time it was like, ugh. Like, it's just putting so much stuff on the board that's hard to attack through on the ground. Could see that maybe being white's best common. I mean, kind of hard to upset Novice Inspector, but
yeah,
really like Inside Source.
Agreed.
Next, we've got Forensic Researcher. This is 2 and a blue for the 1/3 Merfolk Detective. You can tap it to untap another target permanent you control, or you can tap it to collect evidence 3 to tap target creature you don't control. This card's good, fine. I mean, not like a super high pick or anything, but certainly more playable than I would have thought. Like, it lets you ramp early. It turns into a tapper later in the game. It's a detective. I really liked it, like casting it on turn 3, curving it into one of the disguised creatures that then you could flip up instantly on turn 4. Like, did that play pattern quite a bit with my sealed pool at the pre-release.
Yeah, I mean, just I think this is important to point out as like a this is how kind of free-ish collect evidence is. Like, I had this and I did exactly that. Like, played it on 3, used it as a mana dork for a couple turns, and then it was a tapper. And then it was a tapper, and my opponent had to answer it because it was a removal spell for me, right? Like, so I think just pointing that out. Next up,
and maybe even more cool, right? If you actually have a collect evidence build around, it's a free way to collect evidence later in the game that's fairly cheap. Yeah, maybe that's even better than I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a good card. Chatted about this before. Extract a confession, 1 and a black sorcery. As an additional cost to cast it, you can collect evidence 6. Each opponent sacks a creature. If evidence was collected instead, they sack a creature with the greatest power among creatures they control. It's very good, but also can be super awkward. I think there are tokens early sometimes, right before you have the collect evidence, and then also sometimes there's just like I said, things are small. I've had this in hand against a board of 4 2/2s. I'm like, welp, this isn't actually gonna do the thing I want it to do.
I don't think you can pick it that highly, because I don't think you want to end up with 3 copies. Like, no. I think you're pretty happy with 1 copy is kind of what I would think. I haven't played with it, but just seeing the types of cards I played against, like the Inside Sources and Thopter tokens running around, and the Dog Walker tokens. There's just so many cards that make this to where you want to be able to collect evidence 6, and to do that reliably, you can't run that many copies of this card.
Yeah. Next, I've got Gearbane Orangutan. This was my hot take last week, right? 2 and a red, 2/2 reach. When ETBs, you choose 1. Destroy up to 1 target artifact or sack an artifact. If you do, you put 2+/+1 counters on it. I'm out on this. This is a big miss. I think it's definitely a secret gold card. I guess either blue, red, or red, white with Novice Inspectors. But even then, I don't think it's reliable. I'm pretty off this card.
Yeah. Do not like Gearbane Orangutan. Next is Goblin Mask Maker. I am also off this card.
No.
You seem to be pretty jazzed. This is the single red for a 1/2 Goblin Citizen. You know, goblins, famous for being great citizens of a functional society. Whenever it attacks, face down spells you cast this turn cost one less to cast.
I think, so this goes back to, one, there's not a lot of good things to do before turn three, I think. Obviously, the good things are great.
Yeah, but also, Goblin Mask Maker is included in that list, right? But boom, roasted, we got him.
Boom, roasted, I'll see myself out. But one of the things about this that I thought, like, there's just not a lot of two mana two twos that just blank this as an attacker. Like, if you play this on turn one, even if you're on the draw, I think you will get an attack with this into a 2/1 or bounce off a 1/3. Like, there's just not a ton of two mana two twos in the set, and getting to ramp your disguise creatures out, playing your 2/2 ward on two, I do think is a big game. You need like a critical mass of cards, but this is like a sort of, like, I don't know, plan B archetype that I'm really got my eye on for the format.
That is tough for me to buy into.
Okay.
But I trust your prowess as a limited player, so I will keep an eye on it.
Wow.
Next, we have Reckless Detective. This is one in red for an 0/3 at uncommon. Whenever it attacks, you can sacrifice an artifact or discard a card. If you do, draw a card, and Reckless Detective gets +2/+0 until end of turn.
We were sort of like, well, it's like an artifact payoff, like whatever. Like, yeah, if you've got clues, it's pretty cool. If you save the mana. No, this card is just busted. This is you don't need any synergies. You don't need any artifacts or clues. I think I've maybe sacked an artifact to this, and I've attacked with this a ton. It's just a 2-mana 2/3 looter for free.
Rummager, right? But yeah, Rummager, very good.
This card is really, really strong.
Next on the list is Nervous Gardener. One green for a 2/2 with disguise for a green. When it's turned face up, search your library for a land card of the basic land type, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle.
Yeah, I just wanted to put this card on the list because I think I just shortcutted this to, oh, it's Civic Wayfinder. But there's the Surveil lands running around that have types, right? They have the two basic land types. And the way this is worded versus the Topiary Stomper, which has basic land cycling that can only get basics, this gets cards with basic land types, so you can get your Surveil lands with Gardener.
Yeah, card's been very impressive.
Next, we've got Flourishing Bloomkin. This is one and a green for a 0/0. It gets +1/+1 for each forest you control. It has disguise for 4 and a green. When it's turned face up, you search your library for up to 2 forest cards, reveal them, put one onto the battlefield tapped and the other into your hand, then shuffle. We both liked this card, right? We didn't have a grading difference on this last week, so we didn't really talk about it, but I think it's worth talking about because it's maybe a hard card to parse. It's just very good. When I first read this, I thought, oh, maybe you're going to do like a mono green thing in draft, right? You're going to do the green hybrid costs, get a bunch of morphs, do this. This is going to be huge. Well, as we talked about, the green hybrid morphs are all largely garbage, so you don't want to do that. But you also don't need to, like, if you're just playing 9 or 10 green sources in your deck, this is just like gonna flip up as a 2/2 or a 3/3 that draws you 2 cards and ramps you. This card is really, really strong.
Yeah, I like Flourishing Bloomkin quite a bit. Next, we've got Push Pull. So this is a hybrid split card. Push is 1 and Orzhov for a sorcery, destroy target tapped creature. Pull is 4 Rakdos Rakdos for a sorcery, and you can put up to 2 target creature cards from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. They gain haste and you sacrifice them at the beginning of the next end step. Talk to me about this card.
So, I mean, I thought looking at this, and as we chatted about in the previews episode, of like, you're casting Push like 95% of the time, right? Like, and you're never playing like just Pull in a deck, which I do think is true. But I am surprised at how often you want to cast Pull. And I have cast Pull multiple times so far with like ETB effects. It just doesn't, like, you think about this kind of effect, well, you don't, if you're not ending the game when you cast it, you don't want to cast it. But that's not true, because like, you get some ETB triggers, maybe you grab a lifelinker, and it's just because you're getting 2 creatures, like, it's a pretty big swing out of nowhere too, that if you're getting even just a like, grab a thing, ETB, clue, maybe the other thing, whatever, gives you a Thopter. There's just little pieces of ETB value that'll be left around after this card resolves, that I think this is pretty darn good.
So help me parse where it's at power level wise. Like, pack one, pick one, better or worse than Shock?
Probably worse than Shock.
Okay.
I'd give it like a C+, I think.
Okay.
C+ on like flexibility. So maybe B minus on flexibility just because of like mana cost and, you know, you get two cards for one. But like, so it's not better than the premium commons, I don't think. But like, I would have thought that pull rarely came up, and it's already come up multiple times.
Cool.
Have you seen this card yet, this rare? We don't talk about rares very much, but I think I must talk about War Leader's Call. This is one red white for an enchantment. Creatures you control get +1/+1. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, War Leader's Call deals one damage to each opponent.
I have not seen it.
This card's broken. This is going to be one of the best rares in the set. Sure, you think you're stable, but you can't be stable against this. And one of the big movers up, like curving this into one of the red commons that's, I think we sort of left off, the 4 mana, you get a 2/2 and another 2/2.
I had that in my top commons list, friend.
Well, I left it off. It's just insane. Like, this card is a dog walker, 3 points of damage. Like, card is a house.
Yeah. Next up is Due Diligence. This is 2 and a white for an aura, enchant creature. When it ETBs, target creature you control other than enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and gain vigilance until end of turn. And this also gives the enchanted creature +2/+2 and vigilance. I played against this a fair amount at the pre-release, and I don't think it's a super high pick or anything, but in the white decks that want to push damage, this has a pretty high ceiling. Like, often forces you into some awkward blocks or some awkward jumping. I was pretty impressed at how much power and toughness it put out.
Yeah, I've been trying to, I'm trying to cook a little bit in my head here, thinking about maybe some offbeat limited strategies. One card that, like, a buddy of mine texted me the other day, a picture of Snarling Gorehound, single black 1/1 menace. Whenever another creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, you surveil 1. And he was like, what is this? I was like, a bad limited card?
I had that same discussion with my friend from high school at the pre-release.
And I was like, I'd be interested in this if there was like a way to pump it up, right? Like a 2-power menace creature. Now we're talking, but a 1 mana, 1/1 menace is not a limited card. So I'm thinking about this in conjunction with the green 1-drop, right? That ETBs surveil 2, and then you can pay a green to exile from your yard to put a counter on something. So you get these two derpy, you know, last pick common 1-drops. But I'm also thinking about curves of Gorehound on 1, Gorehound on 2, Due Diligence on 3, you're smacking in for 6 points of menace, and one of your menace creatures is a 3/3 now. Like, I think there's something there.
But the issue is, like, I kept beating this card too. The issue is there's great efficient removal. Like, imagine trying to land this against Shock. Like, Shock's really good.
Shock's really good. That's the point. Are you coming around to Shock better than Galvanize?
Like, I like Shock. Listen, I have not been down on Shock, but it's tough. It's a tough world for Due Diligence in that respect, but I think could be a niche 22nd, 23rd card in some types of white beatdown decks.
I don't have a problem with us talking about this next card. I have a problem with your description of this card. This is Bubble Smuggler, 1 and a blue, 2/1. It has disguise for 5 and a blue, and as it's turned face up, you put 4+/+1 counters on it. This isn't clunky.
It kind of is, because
it's okay, sort of form clunky. Hybrid.
Yeah, but it's not good in the format, I don't think. Like, because a 1 and a blue, 2/1 is atrocious. Like, it's not a real card.
So I don't think you ever need to do that, right? Like, you think about, well, this is sometimes if you just need to play a 2-drop, it's a 2-drop. But like, I don't think you need to do that for a 2-mana 2/1.
Well, but so that's where it's not Soraform Hybrid, right? Because like, Soraform Hybrid was a functional 2-mana 2/2 and then turned into a 6/6. Like, once you play this on turn 2, you never get the 6/5. So it's almost always you have to play it as a disguise creature and then pay 6 to flip it up, which is like, that's playing Khans of Tarkir. And I don't think you want to play Khans of Tarkir in this format. I'm pretty off Bubble Smuggler. I stand by my clunky evaluation.
You kind of sold me. I'm surprised, but you kind of sold me on clunky.
Yes, we got him. Next, we've got Crime Stopper Sprite. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/2 fairy detective with flying. You can collect evidence 6 when you cast it. If you do, you get to put a stun counter on a creature you tapped. Otherwise, you just get to tap a creature. This card is very good. So this was like Frostlings with downside, but this is a totally different format, and this card is great in the context of this format.
I think I'm with you. Is this, I mean, I know you have a hot take later, but sans hot take, is this the best blue common?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. We chatted about Dramatic Accusation, the blue aura a little bit. Let's talk Toxin Analysis. This is a single black trick. instant speed, target creature gains death touch and lifelink until end of turn and investigate. Have you had a chance to play with this card?
I have not, no, but I've done a lot of thinking about it, and I've seen a lot of scuttle about it in the Lords of Limited Discord.
So it's great with Suspect, right? That's the obvious thing. Like, you have a suspected thing, it's a 2-2 menace, they have to double block it, and then you get your 3-for-1, right? Give this death touch, kill their two blockers, and get your clue and a little bit of life. I also think it's just good in aggressive decks, which I think black-white can do pretty effectively. I assume black-red can do that pretty effectively in the format, too, where, like, you could kind of just reveal, like, your opponent just gets in spots where it's so clear based on, again, maybe how you've tapped your mana throughout the game or whatever. It's just clear that this is in your hand. You could show it to them and they would still have to block into it, I think. Like, I think this card is, it's not, you know, I don't think it's top black common worthy or anything like that. Like, I don't think it's better than the removal spells, but I do think it's quite good.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, viewing it as an aggressive only card. I think that was what I was not understanding about it, and certainly way better with Suspect.
Yes.
All right, next we've got Case of the Gateway Express. This is 1 and a white for the case at uncommon. When it ETBs, you choose target creature you don't control, and each creature you control deals a damage to that creature. To solve it, you attack with 3 or more creatures this turn, and when it's solved, creatures you control get +1/+0. I have not seen this on the battlefield yet, but after just playing games of the format, this card has to be incredible. Like, it just has to be broken.
I agree that it has to be broken. Also, because of the way it's worded, it pairs pretty nicely with Toxin Analysis. Give a thing death touch, and then the creature deals 1 damage. So you don't need a whole board of stuff to take out something.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think Case is great.
Lastly here, we've got Agency Outfitter. I was very glad to get this out of my system at the pre-release. This is a 4 blue-blue for the Uncommon Sphinx, a 4-3 flyer. When it ETBs, you can search your graveyard, hand, or library for a card named Magnifying Glass and or a card named Thinking Gap. Put them on the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle. This is also not good. Just too expensive. And, like, then you have to put a Magnifying Glass in your deck, and Magnifying Glass isn't great. Mm-hmm. And you do, like, Thinking Cap is a good card, but not in a control deck, which is where Agency Outfitter wants to go. Like, all told, it's just weird combinations of effects that don't really fit in a cohesive archetype is the biggest issue.
I feel like if you could somehow get it to be like Thinking Cap comes into play and auto equip, like, then you're like, all right, I worked hard for my 6-mana 5/5 flyers. Like, yeah, that's still not good.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a list of re-ranked top commons here. We're not going to go through all of these, but I do want to just chat about some stuff that has shifted for us. White, we're largely the same as we were last week, right? Like, Novice Inspector, great. Makeshift Binding, the removal spell, great. Inside Source, 3-mana 2/2 and a 1/1. Great.
Yes.
Give us your hot take here, Ben.
You don't even want to be associated with this at all.
I'm not associated with this, but I appreciate, I'm here for the content of it.
So I have been crazy impressed with Out Cold. I mean, I liked it in theory, but it played out when I saw it how I pictured it in my head, which is just horrifically oppressive. It's 3 and a white instant, can't be countered. You tap up to 2 target creatures, put a stun counter on each of them, and investigate. Like, the format, certainly blue seems to want to play a tempo-heavy game when it's not paired with green or black. Like, in blue, white, and blue, red. So maybe it's tough for this to be number one, but I think you're going to be going so hard after blue-white decks that you're going to be interested in this. It's just so much time. It's forever, and it replaces itself. This card is backbreaking if you have any sort of board presence to back it up.
I buy it. Now, I notice in this list that you have the Cold Case Cracker is off. This is the 3 and a blue 3/3 flyer. When it dies, you get a clue. I had, so in one of my 2 sealed decks, in my blue-green version, I had 2 of those, and I had also 2 of the, it's just a little redundant, right, that your 4-drop slot, as we often talk about, can get filled up. I had the green 4-mana 3/3 comes with a clue, you know, on the front side, and if you draw a second card, it gets +1/+1 in Vigilance. Those are kind of interchangeable in my mind, but I thought the Cold Case Cracker was pretty good.
It was fine. Yeah, yeah. It's a fine card. Like, it's not bad, but it's also not good. Like, to where you'd want to go after it aggressively
in
the draft because you don't want it to die. Well, it's 4 mana and you got a 3-3 flyer, but you also then don't want your 3-3 flyer to die.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like, it's just a weird combination of cards, and it doesn't, it's not great at blocking, but it's also not great on offense. And if you're using it on offense, you don't want it to die. I don't know. I felt fine about it. It was also very easy for my opponents to dictate when it died. Like, you just didn't necessarily get the investigate when you wanted to be investigating.
That's fair. For me, I'm on Crime Stopper Sprite as Blue's top common. I had Deduce as my number. That was maybe a hot take last week. The one in a blue, draw a card and investigate. I think Deduce is pretty filler. It might have some applications of synergy, but like, I do think, I just don't know if you had, there's time for that. Like I've got to go back to my default of like, you just don't want raw cards. Like there's so much value among cards anyway, that
are already affecting the board. Yeah.
Right. They're like paying 2 mana to draw a card and then 2 mana to draw a card. It's just, you don't have time for that.
I think my if I could try to summarize how I'm viewing the format right now, it would be that efficiency is king.
Mm.
Like you really want great rates on the cards that you're playing.
That's
probably true in Magic in general, but certainly in formats where the power level is higher, like March of the Machines, or as this one appears to be, the rate matters a ton.
When is Black going to get good creatures at common?
I don't know, but it really doesn't have any, which is kind of a problem. So I have moved Unscrupulous Agent up the pick order. This is one in a black for a 1/1, ETBs, target opponent exiles a card from their hand. And it's also a detective,
yeah,
which is pretty nice. Like that's plays, more relevant than you would think.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's the card you're often targeting with Inside Source is the Unscrupulous Agent. You're like, that's the detective you're giving +2/+0 in vigilance to, you know?
Right, yeah, to try to trade it for another card.
Mm-hmm.
I had a couple of my sealed pool, and it felt amazing in sealed just to get on the board, have your opponent exile a card, but I imagine this card has to be great in draft as well.
Yeah, I think I'm imminent for that, but it doesn't look like... I do think it plays nicely in the black-white. I think that black-white, like small creatures, that can be an assertive space just because... You know, you're playing you play your Novice Inspector on one, you play your Unscrupulous Agent on two. Like, sure, those cards, like, they're 2-for-1s. You're getting 2 rectangles from those cards, and I think that black-white deck makes use of them with whatever, the go-wide stuff, the power 2 or less matters stuff, and Toxin Analysis, that sort of thing.
So, like, another thought that's been rummaging around in my brain here after playing with black a fair amount and then just looking at the commons again while we were prepping for the episode... I'm kind of wondering if black is going to be again in a spot similar to where it was in LCI, where it's just very hard for it to be
aggressive.
An aggressive color, which makes me worried for black red.
Yes.
As the suspect deck.
That's what but I maybe told you. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, the Watsi Kool-Aid. It doesn't have to be aggro.
But maybe there are like enough uncommons that can still work as an aggressive archetype. But I also do think black is incredible at playing a controlling role. Certainly excellent paired with blue, high hopes for the black white utility thing, and then I think black green's also going to have some legs.
I agree. Yeah. I'm not going in being like, oh, don't touch black with a 10-foot pole, far from it, but I think it's worth noting that Unscrupulous Agent is probably its best way to affect the board other than removing stuff from your opponent's board.
Right.
Are you here? We're here at red. You still have Galvanize in the number 1 spot. Are you ready?
Am I ready? Wow. Sure, I'm ready.
There it is.
What they want.
That's what they want. And you know, you had it already, but I think Person of Interest was off my list last week, and that was an egregious error. This is 3 in a red, 2/2. When it ETBs, you suspect it, and you make a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token. Definitely, like, kept forgetting that this was suspected, but like the fact that it's like it's a 2/2 menace plus a 2/2, and that's upside. Not like, don't think about it like it's a 2/2 that can't block and a 2/2. Like, it's just so good.
Well, and I think just worth noting going into games, suspect is a tricky mechanic. Like, yep. You need to think really hard before you suspect one of your creatures. Because if the tempo of the game turns around, like, it is disastrous that you chose to suspect one of your creatures and now it can't block.
Yeah, very flavorful, right? Like, don't want to suspect, don't want to just throw around the suspicions. I think that's totally true. And also just think about attacking when suspected creatures are in play. Is it important? Like, just take an extra second when you're thinking about combat and the math of the future turns, because I think that also is going to come up.
There were definitely a couple times at the pre-release that I had just had a lot of magic cards on my side of the board. A couple of them were suspected and couldn't block. And my opponents were like, I'm just not going to attack. Just pass. Like, the board is too complicated. Like, I didn't really actually have
that's funny
that much board presence.
And then looking at green, I actually like the 3 that you have. So Dervis Gardener, I think, is still clearly number 1. This is, again, I talked about there's not a lot of 2-mana 2/2s running around. This is one. And playing this as a 2-mana 2/2, the fact that this just straight up trades with a disguised creature while it's disguised is very nice. I definitely have done my fair share of both disguising this and just playing it on turn 2. But I think Nervous Gardener is great. I like V2 Ghazi Inspector in the number two spot. I'm here for that take.
That's the card we talked about earlier in the episode, the one in a green 1/3 reach. If you collected six evidence when it ETB'd, you get to put a +1/+1 counter anywhere and gain 2 life.
And then I think Bite Down on Crime, I got to play with that a little bit just because of collect evidence 6 being a little easier to get after. I think Bite Down on Crime number 3 is good. And I like Loxodon on Eavesdropper, the 4-mana 3/3 get a clue, but it's so interchangeable. And the fact that Bite Down on Crime can cost 2 mana, I think puts that at number 3 for me.
And if we're viewing the collect evidence as upside, which I think is probably right, yeah.
Right.
Just a slightly more flexible, powerful card, slightly more synergistic, all those things.
Exactly. Ben, I think we have time.
Let's do it. Round table.
Round table. Okay, so we'll put a link to this draft log in our show notes where you download the episode. If you do that, if you are doing your homework, doing your extra credit, you will notice that the picks that we make here are different than the ones I took. Ben even messaged me. He was like, I like this draft log. Would you have made the same pack one, pick one? I was like, no, I don't think so. So rather than just like go down two divergent paths on air, we'll just talk about what we would actually take here. So Ben, you ready to take a seat at your first MKM draft?
Always. All right. Always want to do a draft of a new format.
So pack one, pick one, you sit down and you see the following cards as options. We got some good commons. There's Shock, Dead Center, single red. Instant, deal 2 to any target. Unscrupulous Agent is here. 1 and a black. 1/1 when it ETBs, target opponent exiles a card from their hand. There's Nervous Gardener. So we got 3 top commons here, right? That's pretty nice. Moving on to the uncommons. I'm going to shout out Whisper Drinker Vampire. It's the black-white signpost. 2 white-black for a 2/4 flyer. When another creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, each opponent loses a life and you gain a life. And it has 5 white-black. Creatures you control with power 2 or less gain death touch and lifelink until end of turn. Been very impressed by this card. I think it's good. There's Surveillance Monitor, 3 and a blue for a 3/3. When it ETBs, you can collect evidence 4. And whenever you collect evidence, create a 1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature token with flying. And your rare in the pack, I'm curious, Mr. Blue-Black Control, how you feel about this, is No Witnesses. 2 white-white for a sorcery. Each player who controls the most creatures investigates, then destroy all creatures.
I like the rare. The tough part about it is that white primarily wants to beat down, and this is a bit at odds with what white wants to do. Not to say that you can't draft a white control deck, but just to start with that in mind is a little awkward. So I think I would leave the rare here for the most part. I would be trying to decide, honestly, amongst the commons. I don't think Surveillance Monitor is where I want to be at the start of a draft. I would rather be in blue and be able to be collecting evidence for sure before going in on that type of card. I do like the Whisp Drinker Vampire, but I don't think you need to take a gold card here. I just think there are enough good commons. So for me, I would quickly narrow it down to the 3 commons in Shock, Nervous Gardener, and Unscrupulous Agent. I've been very impressed with cheap interaction. I think I would start with Shock over probably Agent and then Gardener, but I just haven't played with Gardener yet to really know.
Yeah, I buy that. I'm on Shock as well, personally. Do you have we have this in our show notes, but I'll put you on the spot. Do you have a preliminary color power rankings?
I don't. I haven't played enough. And I love a color power ranking. I love an archetype power ranking. It's coming next week. Don't you worry.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. I think for me, it's either red or white and getting to start there. Red or white at the top spot, at least. Haven't thought about the bottom half of the colors, but just getting to get into red for Shock is so good.
Well, I guess I have thought about it. I take it back. Now that we're putting some takes out there, I'm going to get mine out in the world as well. I would go white 1, blue 2. Red 3, and then black and green duking it out somewhere. Okay. But I also think everything seems playable.
Yeah, for sure. So we're in for Shock out of this pack.
Yes.
Pack 1, pick 2. If it was good enough to take first, it's probably good enough to take second. There's another Shock. There's also Extract Confession, the 1 and a black edict at common. There's Escape Tunnel. That's the Evolving Wilds variant. Tap, sack, search up a basic land, put it into play, tapped. Or tap, sack, target creature with power 2 or less can't be blocked this turn. At the uncommons, there's a Fester Leech, single black. When it deals combat damage to a player, you mill 2 cards. You can pay 1 and a black to give it +2/+2 until end of turn. Activate only once each turn. And then some red-green cards, right? There's Tinstreet Gossip, 2 red-green for a 4/4 with Vigilance. Tap to add red-green, spend this mana only to cast face-down spells or to turn creatures face up. It's a bummer. Like, I feel like that's not gonna be a real card, right? Like, I don't know. I'm just not excited about red green disguise.
That's just more due to red green falling flat, though, than like and not getting great disguise creatures than it is.
Right.
Tin Street Gossip is a bad card. It's more that right. it didn't get the good pieces around it, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
But maybe a little early to call Time of Death. Neither of us have drafted a red green yet.
Totally fair. And like it might be that it's like it's good, but you don't need the Tin Street Gossip or what, you know, you think about it this way, or maybe my little one drop, one mana 1/2 that makes the disguise creatures cheaper. Stop. What? Stop shaking your head. Have you played against Frantic Scapegoat? Single red 1/1 haste when ETBs suspect it, and then whenever one or more other creatures enter the battlefield under your control, if it's suspected, you can suspect one other creature, and if you do, Frantic Scapegoat is no longer suspected.
I had some
folks tell me that this was a good little buddy.
I would imagine in a red aggressive deck that you're happy to play Frantic Scapegoat. Yeah, chip in for some early damage and then yeah. make your better threat menace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess I have two questions for you. One, the easy question is, what are you taking here? Which it's shock. You're taking shock number 2, I would assume.
Yes.
If this were pack one, pick one, and you'll notice there's no rare, so let's say the rare was a dud, are you still taking shock? Does Fester Leech intrigue you at all? Something good to do early? Get the collect evidence fodder a rollin'?
I still think I would prefer to take shock, but that's more out of caution than anything else. I guess, if I'm trying to learn, I would take Fester Leech. If I were trying to win, I would take Shock, because I just don't know how good Fester Leech is yet. And I have very much wanted interaction in the format.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it wouldn't surprise me if Shock were the right answer, but maybe you take Fester Leech to kind of cook a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think taking Shock number 2 makes a lot of sense here. You don't want to spread yourself too thin. I think we might end up feeling like, in a couple weeks, like, oh, actually, pack one, pick one, Fester Leech is great because so unique, XYZ, Black's underdrafted, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So 2 shocks under your belt. Oh, baby. I'm just I'm licking my lips here looking at Goblin Mask Maker, pack 1, pick 3.
Stop.
Single red 1/2. Whenever it attacks, face down spells you cast this turn cost 1 less to cast.
This is part of Ethan's misinformation campaign for the BT.
Got it. Don't let them know. This pack is actually really stacked. There are no blue cards, but don't let that fool you. That doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? Could just have been no blue cards in the pack to begin with. But lots of bangers at higher rarity, even a couple, I think, fine commons to chat about. There's a Bite Down on Crime. Where are you at on Slice from the Shadows? X and a black instant, can't be countered. Target creature gets -X/-X until end of turn.
I don't love it. Okay. It's fine. Don't love it. I think it is potentially better than Extract a Confession, now that I'm kind of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. But again,
I don't love it. It's very hard for it to be efficient. And if I'm saying efficiency is important, it's tough to like Slice from the Shadows.
I agree. Right? But again, sort of as we're thinking about how good Shock is, the fact that, Shock just like kills other things really cheaply, plus can trade even on mana. The selling point for Slice is that it can also trade even on mana with Disguise, but then it doesn't kill anything else particularly efficiently. But I'm also not taking Goblin Mask Maker. There's a Reckless Detective in the pack, and that's all I have eyes for. That's the one in a red 0/3. When it attacks, you can sack an artifact or discard a card. If you do, draw a card, and Reckless Detective gets +2/+0 until end of turn. But that's not all, and I'm curious about where you'd be at pack one, pick one. Again, that same conversation. There's a Meddling Youths, 3 red/white for the 4/5 with haste. Whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, investigate. This card's great. Shout out to you comparing it to, what was it called?
Aomer of the Rittermark.
Aomer. I mean, not quite, I think, is as powerful as that, but it's large and in charge.
Yeah, card's good. I don't think you're picking it here. Have we shouted out Undercity Eliminator already?
No.
That's sitting in the pack as well, one of our preview cards. 3 black/black for an uncommon. When it ETBs, you can sacrifice an artifact or creature. When you do, exile target creature and opponent controls. I mean, if we're talking pack ones, pick one situations, where are you at on Detective versus Undercity Eliminator?
You've been using the E word all episode. I'm going efficiency. Reckless Detective, baby.
That's what I think, too. And with 2 shocks, I think it's a pretty clear Reckless Detective from this pack. And off to a great start to a red, interactive, aggressive deck.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to pick a second color, pick 4. So I'm curious to see where you go. Or maybe you don't, actually, because pack 1, pick 4 with 3 red cards. There is an escape tunnel, the land that searches up a basic or makes a 2 power or less creature unblockable until end of turn. Then I have my eyes on Crime Stopper Sprite, the Tuna Blue 2-2 flyer. As an additional cost to cast it, you can collect evidence 6. And when it enters the battlefield, you tap a thing. And if you collected evidence, you keep that thing tapped for a turn. You stun it. There's Inside Source, 2-1 white, 1-1, brings along a 2-2 detective. There's also, should we chat about Market Watch Phantom? That was one of your top white commons, right? Have you seen this? 1-1 white, 2-2, whenever another creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, it gains flying until end of turn.
Yeah, it's been good. It's only an aggressive card, though. Like, you can't just put it in a random deck. Like, you really have to be wanting to beat down, I think, before you're interested in Market Watch Phantom.
I buy that. I buy that for sure. So what do you like between Source and Sprite slash would you just delay the decision and take an Escape Tunnel?
Well, I think, first of all, just chatting about Escape Tunnel being excellent as a fixer, enabling splashes for face down disguise cards. But also the last ability of sacrificing it to make a creature with power 2 or less unblockable. Like, really, you got to be careful about letting your life total get too low, because the play pattern of using this on a disguise creature and then flipping up some 5 or 6 power disguise creature, like from a green or a blue deck or whatever, is not going to be uncommon, I don't think. And certainly it's going to be kind of oppressive in aggressive decks, too, because it's going to be able to chip through the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 points of damage on some disguise creature. You know, maybe your opponent stabilizes at 3 and you make your dog walker that's face down unblockable. So certainly more utility than Evolving Wilds in general. I really like it. I think largely for me, this comes down to Escape Tunnel versus Inside Source.
Mm-hmm.
And hard to know what pick is right here without having drafted yet. But I think that will largely come down to, is red white one of the best archetypes, which I would expect it is. And if it is, I think you're taking Inside Source to try to get into one of the best archetypes. And if it's not, then you would take Escape Tunnel to try to delay the decision.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I should also shout out another card in this pack that I had a chance to play with, which is Repulsive Mutation. It's X green blue for an instant. You put X +1/+1 counters on target creature you control, then counter up to one target spell unless its controller pays mana equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. So first of all, I'm surprised that I didn't get the old Mystic Snake argument from you about this.
You got to have a creature on the battlefield already. It is not Mystic Snake.
You got to have a creature on the battlefield.
An exaggeration.
Yeah, for sure. So it's not Mystic Snake, obviously. You have to have a creature on the battlefield. But what I sort of missed about this is that it does two things. One is that it can counter a thing for as long as you have a creature in play.
Right. It's kind of Mana Leak-esque.
It's Mana Leak-esque. But the reverse also happened for me, which is that gotten a bit of a board stall, had this in hand. Whatever, my opponent and I are just going like land, go, land, go, land, go. I'm sitting with like 10, 11, 12 lands on the battlefield. Draw this puppy, smash all. One of them being Topiary Stomper. My opponent goes,
oh, you don't have to counter a thing.
My opponent just goes, I'm putting a 6/6 in front of your 6/5 trample. And I go, 10 +1/+1 counters, your go. And that's what won me the game. So you don't have to counter something. This can play that sort of role as well. So
yeah, just, that's a pretty versatile card then.
It's pretty versatile.
I hadn't put that together. I'd put the Mana Leak part together. I hadn't put the kind of overrun.
Oops, you're dead. Yeah. Overrun. And it doesn't have to be a trample, or like just as long as you're wide enough that one blocker can get through. So again, another, I think we're going to see probably more so in the first couple weeks than as people start to get familiar with things, but we're probably going to see some mixture of like, oops, I'm dead. Like, we thought the game was going a certain way. It was sort of, and then your opponent's like, Escape Tunnel, unblockable, Inside Source +2/+0. Now you're dead. And you're like, oh man, like now I got to backtrack and think about if that was inevitable or if there was a way for me to prevent that and then to learn from that, you know?
Right. The other thing I just want to quickly chat about here before we start to wrap things up is, you know, we talked about play boosters. The other thing that stuck out to me was when I looked through this log and I got to the wheel, I was like, whoa. Like, when you get to the wheel, there's 5 cards left in the pack, which is kind of wild, right? Like, I think the wheel is going to matter less. Like, that's going to be a thing with play boosters, right?
Yeah.
And largely going to be probably not that good of cards left.
Yeah. Yeah, I buy all that. That makes sense.
That did strike me as different.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That doesn't sound like old man Ben shouting it. Play booster clouds. That sounds legit.
To be clear, I do not want to be pegged as the hater of play boosters. Let's please not. I mean, I know I am good at throwing some shade when it's needed, but I do not want to take up that mantle. I am largely very excited for play boosters and for the format. I think It's just going to be a little different, but I think it could potentially be a very good different.
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited. I mean, this format looks sweet. Again, like I said, it's flavorful to a T, but also I think there's a lot of wiggle room. And I'm excited that face down creatures are back.
Any parting thoughts before we go out here?
I'm sad to say, but because the Pro Tour is online, usually I get into the format and I'm like, oh, who cares? What's the best? Like, I'm just going to be cooking. I'm in the lab. No, I'm going to be I need to know what's the best, Ben. That's what that's what I need to do.
Don't you worry.
Time.
Me and the Lords of Limited Discord and you, we have the world's biggest limited testing team on
that's
our
true.
Side.
That's very true. Yeah, we do. Yeah, looking forward to it.
I do have one last update that we didn't chat about. I have one more update for my pre-release. I would just like to throw out there that I left Nightdrinker Moroi in my sideboard where it belongs at the pre-release.
You know, I had this in the show notes. I decided to pass over it. I was going to be the bigger man, but the people spoke, Ben. You said, let's take it to the Twitter streets. And as I was editing and I got to that part of the episode, I was like, you know what? Let's do it. So we put Nightdrinker Moroi and Dual Leech, Slimy Dual Leech, into the arena, and the closest Twitter poll that has ever been held. Ben, I was watching it with bated breath, like election night in November, just biting my nail as the votes came in. I think we needed a recount. Did it end in 52% to 48%?
Ended 52 to 48 in Nightdrinker Moroi's favor, but that just means there's 2% of people out there that are very confused, or 52% of people out there that are very confused. Wow. Because the leech is where it's at.
I mean, I forgot that everybody, as we talked about, like, we got to start this draft with two shocks. Like, you always have shock in your hand, so that's going to be easy to kill the 4-2 flyer, right?
Yeah, that's the way it works. But I think, okay, can I sell you on this? Can I get one more? Let me ask you this in there. With what we talked about in the context of black not being great at being an aggressive color, potentially, seemingly, does that make you any less excited for Nightdrinker Moroi?
No.
No.
I'm all in, baby.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to CoolStuffInc.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over there, and we highly encourage you to do so, please use checkout code LOL. When you do, to let them know we sent you there, and more importantly, to get 5% off of anything you purchase. You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. Ben is tirelessly working on our tier list, courtesy of 17lands.com. So that'll be available there for all of your early hot takes. Please be sure, don't let him know that it was helpful. Just let him know which cards he got wrong. That's how people like to use tier lists. We also have our merch over there. I forgot to tell you, I got a LOL hoodie from TeePublic, and I got a Magicians Against Data t-shirt to rep at MC Chicago. I'm excited about those arriving pretty soon. So we got our merch over there. We got our tier list. We got our episode backlogs. We got our YouTube channel. We got our Twitch streams. So much stuff. It should be your homepage, lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, or if you want to tell us why Galvanize is still better than Shock, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.